Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasatim Vyasa. Tato Jayamudirayet. Nashta Prayeshava Vadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 11. Jara Bharata instructs King Rahugana, verse number 15. Before that, actually maybe it's good to keep this clock not working, because then we can be reminded that time stops when you are glorifying the Lord. We heard this morning in the Namamrita reading that there's no effect of time. The sun, what was it? The sun does not take away the life of a person who is chanting the holy name. So maybe all the clocks in Radhadesh should be stopped. Anyway, but I think then the function of the clock is not there, which is to remind when to stop. Who is the specialist in clock fixing here? I think it just takes a new battery. Do we have a specialist for that? Or is that Manohar? Sorry? Oh dear. What to do? Okay. Yes, verse 15. Let's chant. Naya vadetam tanu brindarendra. Naya vadetam tanu brindarendra. Vidhuyamayam vayunodayena. Vidhuyamayam vayunodayena. Vimukta sangha jita shat sapatno. Vimukta sangha jita shat sapatno. Vedhatma tattvam brahmati hatavat. Vedhatma tattvam brahmati hatavat. Na, not, yavat, as long as, etam, this, tanubrit, one who has accepted a material body, narendra, O king, vidhuyamayam, washing away the infection, accumulated because of contamination by the material world. Vayuna udayena, by awakening of transcendental knowledge. due to good association and study of the Vedic literatures. Vimukta Sangha, freed from all material association. Jitta Shatsapatna, conquering the six enemies, the five knowledge acquiring senses and the mind. Veda knows. Atmatatvam, spiritual truth. Brahmati, he wanders. Iha, in this material world. Tavat, until that time. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My dear King Rahugana, as long as the conditioned soul accepts the material body and is not freed from the contamination of material enjoyment, and as long as he does not conquer his six enemies and come to the platform of self-realization by awakening his spiritual knowledge, he has to wander among different places and different species of life in the material world. Shall we repeat that? Yes. That's a good verse. My dear King Rahugana, as long as the conditioned soul accepts the material body and is not freed from the contamination of material enjoyment, and as long as he does not conquer his six enemies, and come to the platform of self-realization by awakening his spiritual knowledge, he has to wander among different places and different species of life in this material world. Purport. When one's mind is absorbed in the material conception, he thinks that he belongs to a particular nation, family, country, or creed. You all know what a creed is? Huh? Creed. Caste? No. Caste? No. Caste is something else. What's a creed? Tattva Vikram. Okay, it's a belief system, maybe. These are all called upadhis, designations, and one has to become freed from them, sarva upadhi vinirmuktam. As long as one is not freed, he has to continue conditioned life in material existence. The human form of life is meant for cleansing away these misconceptions. If this is not done, one has to repeat the cycle of birth and death, and thus suffer all material conditions. Nayavade tang tanubrin narendra vidhuyamayam vayunodayena vimukta sango jitashat sapatno vedatma tatvam ramati hatavat. My dear King Rahugana, as long as the conditioned soul accepts the material body and is not freed from the contamination of material enjoyment, and as long as he does not conquer his six enemies and come to the platform of self-realization by awakening his spiritual knowledge, he has to wander among different places and different species of life in this material world. This verse, the Sanskrit, has this yavat tavat relative, correlative construction. As long as something is the case, or in this case there's a negative, na yavat, as long as it's not the case that one engages in or knows, Veda, atma tattvam, tavat, that long, one has to, what? One has to wonder, brahmati, yes. Jadabharata is speaking from experience. he was like Humpty Dumpty. He had a great fall. And all the king's horses and all the king's men could not put Jadabharata together again. He's speaking to Rahugana, who is also wandering. He's on a palanquin. I don't know that it's mentioned where he's headed or whether it's mentioned that he's headed somewhere. But in any case, the real point we understand after hearing from Jadabharata, who has been not very successfully carrying the king, after we hear and after the king hears all these instructions, we understand, he understands, wherever he was going was not very important. He is just wandering in the material world, and by his good fortune, he is meeting Jadabharata, who by his good fortune has come to understand the futility of what he was doing in his effort to attain perfection, self-realization. He became distracted, he became fallen, and had to take a detour, a major detour on his path. But now he's back on the path of self-realization, and in his path he is teaching, and in his teaching he is warning. And this is the warning: if one doesn't understand Veda, Atma Tattvam, then one will have to go back in, one will flunk the glass and have to go back. This was the greatest terror in school. Well, I don't know, I wasn't ever too worried about this, but one heard rumors sometimes of students flunking. You know the word flunking? To flunk. We need another definition. Not passing, and therefore, yeah, you have to stay back, yes. Stay back, or you may even have to go further back. So, life is like that. It's the opportunity to go forward. It's the danger of remaining in a state of wandering. And the word for wandering, brahmati, I think is interesting, and we might explore a little bit this whole idea of wandering. One point is that the word brahmati from brahm can mean also mistake. And it also is there in the word brahmanda. Brahmanda is means what? What's a brahmanda? It's a universe. It's a place of wandering, and it's an anda. It's dark. It's an egg. So we are inside of an egg called the universe. And what are we doing here? We are wandering. We are wandering aimlessly, you could say. In what way? Well, that's mentioned in the verse in Prabhupada's translation. Wandering in different species in this material world, and different places, different species, but also wandering between the position of spiritual understanding, realization, and ignorance, wandering between ignorance and knowledge. Sometimes there may be a degree of knowledge, more often there will be ignorance, right? And this wandering is suggested also in our constitutional identity. It's understood that we are not of the internal energy, we are not of the external energy, we are tatastha shakti, we are situated in between. And being situated in between, we are prone to go one way or another. So this is also a kind of wandering. We might say this is the ontological state of the living entity, to tend to wander one way or the other between matter and spirit. And there's also a tendency to wander in our understanding of our relationship to the Lord. I was reading in the a translation of Paramatma Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami is talking about this relation of the self, the supreme self, supreme soul, Paramatma, and the individual self. And actually he's quoting from verses which have just been in this chapter. He's speaking about this verses 11, 12, 13, where it's talking about kshetragnya, the knower of the field. And he explains one kind of, I thought, interesting point, several interesting points. One is that kshetragnya, as it's used here, is what's called an eka-shesha samasa. A samasa is a compound. It's more than one word. It's in Sanskrit, it can have a whole string of words. But this is a case where it's only one word, which is a compound. And how does that work? Well, he's explaining that kshetragnya has two meanings. It can mean paramatma, it can mean atma. And similarly, the word atma in today's verse, vedatma tattvam, we could say is an ekashesha samasa. It's atma can refer to the individual self, or it can refer to the supreme self. It's kind of interesting also, I found, in this passage, Jiva Goswami is explaining how in the Vedic literature, depending on your desire, it will tell you one thing or another. So if you want to understand the absolute truth as being impersonal, then the Vedic literature will supply that understanding. And if you want to understand that we are individual eternal spirit souls, servant of the Lord, that knowledge is also given, is supplied. And then he speaks about the idea of our being reflections of the Lord. The technical term is pratibimba. It is stated in some places that we are reflections of the Lord. Now, the term reflection, we can think of reflection in a mirror, we can think of, actually the example is given of the sun or the moon and reflection on water. And Jiva Goswami says, it says that we are reflections of the Supreme, but that's not really true. It says in Shastra, but actually that's not the case. Jiva Goswami is saying, don't believe it. What he's saying is that it's meant not to be taken literally. Then you may ask, so then why does it say it at all? Are we being Is Shastra trying to mislead us? No, he says, it's there. The purpose of that image of reflection is for us to appreciate the greatness of the Lord. In other words, in comparison to the Lord, we are but reflections. We are like a reflection. We are insubstantial in comparison to the Lord. Does that mean, therefore, we are reflections of the Lord and that's end of, that's the state, that's it? No, he says. Don't get it wrong. So actually, Shastra can be very subtle. And to understand it properly can be an interesting challenge. But with the help of acharyas, we come to proper understanding. This wandering between an understanding of self as separate from or one with the Lord, it strikes me that there's a psychological issue here. Sometimes we want to be separate, but sometimes it can be very frightening to be separate, to have a sense of being separate from others. If you know, we're in a group, a crowd of people, and everyone looks at you and says, "Ooh, you're not one of us," that can be very frightening. It can be terrible. It can be, the worst experience. Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. That can be something one is most anxious about, not to be separate. On the other hand, it's a frightening, or it can be a frightening thought, to the prospect of being one with someone else, or with the Lord, or with everything. The idea of merging, actually, for the Vaishnava, is frightening. Sayujya Mukti is considered like hell. It's considered to be, if not worse than hell. But the extreme, one extreme or the other, if it goes to an extreme, becomes frightening. It becomes horrific. It becomes horrible. It becomes something not wanted. And so what to do, how to keep in the right position, how to keep the balance of not being too different and not being too much one. The solution, we understand, is service. The activity of service, that is giving us the balance, so that our wandering, instead of being material wandering, which is aimless, becomes a spiritual wandering, a seeking of the Lord. So in the Bhagavatam, we have lots of accounts of wandering, which is spiritual wandering. We have one case. In the beginning, we have Maharaj Parikshit. He is wandering as he's hunting, and he is not spiritually wandering yet. But by circumstance and by a curse, he's suddenly forced to seek out. In that case, then he stops his wandering, and he seeks out the Vaishnavas. Shukadev Goswami has been wandering, and then he finds, or he comes to meet Maharaj Parikshit. Narada Muni, in his previous life, what happens? His mother dies suddenly, and he decides the best thing to do is to go wandering. Vidura sees that he's not welcome at home. He's seen as too much different, as an outsider. So he says, okay, I'm out of here. I will now become an official outsider, and I will wander the earth. And so he does. Balaram also decides, I can't be either part of this group or part of that group. I'm going wandering. I'm going on pilgrimage. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's so much wandering. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a wanderer. As he takes sannyas, the first thing he wants to do is go to Vrindavan. He has an aim. He wants to go to Vrindavan, but what happens? He wanders about in, we might say, too much ecstasy. And he ends up at the home of Advaitacharya, and then eventually Puri. But then he's too restless to stay in Puri. He's been advised by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you should seek out Ramananda Rai. He is an amazing devotee, and you can learn from him what you are actually pursuing. Sarvabhauma understands this is a devotee of the Lord. I know someone who will inspire him even further. And so he wanders. He wanders south, and he meets Ramananda Rai. And for the next several years, or few years, he wanders. In Navadvip, before all of this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also wandering with his devotees. They go out. Udilo Aruna Purababhage Vijamani Gura Amani Jage. They go wandering. But what is their wandering? It is chanting the holy name. Tatai Tatai Bajaloko Gana Gana Tahe Janjara Roll. Playing the Mridanga and the Janjas, they sing the holy name. And what do? They call out to the people, you are sleeping, you are simply wasting your time, you are wandering in material existence aimlessly. There's much literature that explores material wandering. I was thinking about Homer's Odyssey. Has anyone read the Odyssey of Homer? Famous book. Yes, Maharaji? It's about wandering where? Where is he wandering to or trying to wander to? He's trying to wander home, isn't he? Yes. He finally gets home, and what does he find? Sorry? Yes, a lot of crazy men who are chasing after his wife, and he has to fight all these men to get rid of them so he can reclaim his wife. Another famous wandering story is Dante's Divine Comedy. It's a divine comedy because it has a happy ending, not because it's funny. In fact, the first part of it is Inferno, and it's not at all funny. He finds himself, he kind of stumbles into hell one fine day. He's thinking he's minding his own business, and then he stumbles into hell. And there he gets guidance. Anyone read the Divine Comedy? Tattvavit, are you a... Yes, like me, and part of it. He meets Virgil. He meets a poet. And Virgil leads him from the Inferno into Purgatory, and through Purgatory, and at one point, I can't remember exact position, but at some point, he meets one lady named Beatrice. Beatrice, it turns out, was his a woman he aspired to marry, Dante, as the poet, inspired in his life to marry. And then she died, and he was longing for her. Anyway, she becomes a kind of spiritual mentor for him and leads him to paradise, ultimately to meet with God. So that's the Divine Comedy. It has a happy ending. He meets God. There's another wandering story in American literature, Moby Dick. Anyone ever read Moby Dick? No? You saw the movie? Moby Dick is the name given to a huge whale, a sperm whale, who has on one whale hunting trip of Captain Ahab, has in the process of trying to kill this whale, has bitten off Captain Ahab's leg, the lower part of his leg. And Captain Ahab survives and wants to wreak revenge on this whale. And all he can think of for the next some years is how he's going to go out and kill that whale. It's an easily identifiable whale because it's white. Most whales, sperm whales, are black. This one is white. And so the whole book, 500, 600, whatever, long pages, you learn a lot about whaling, whether you like it or not. And you learn a lot about whales. But the point I want to make is that Captain Ahab takes his crew on this journey. They don't know it until they've left port that he's on a mission, which is to kill this one whale. And there's his assistant, one of his assistants understands this is not a good idea, but everyone else is persuaded, yes, let's go get this whale. Well, finally in the end, when they finally, after wandering the planet, one ocean after another, wandering, they're not wandering so aimlessly because they're looking for this whale. Finally, they find the whale, and the battle begins. And in the battle, the whale wins, and he manages to ram the ship, and the ship sinks, and everybody dies, except the author of, the one who tells the tale, and he survives only because he's able to hold on to some wood which was used to make a coffin which was made for one harpooner named Queequeg, who they thought was dying. They were preparing a coffin for him, but then he survived. Anyway, some irony is there. The point is, material world, wandering in the material world, even if there is an aim, a purpose, people become very determined. I'm going to accomplish this or that. But in the process, what do they do? Captain Ahab, he dragged everyone with him down in the process of trying to get his revenge. Therefore, it is said in Shastra, Rishabdev says to his sons, in this same canto, he says, Guru nasasyat, svajano nasasyat, pita nasasyat, janani nasasyat, daivam natatsyan napatis, chasasyan namochayetya, samupetam rityum. Unless you can deliver your dependents, don't become a captain of a ship, don't become a guru, don't become a mother, a father, etc., etc. Don't become someone who is responsible for others. So the wandering, this verse we're reading today is saying, if we don't understand the self, Atma, taken as supreme self or individual self, Atma Tattva, then we have to wander. But in the process of wandering, we may be dragging others down with us. So there's a moral point here. It's not just that, okay, we may suffer ourselves, but we may implicate others in the problem that we have. The verse refers to one in this world as Tanu Brit. Tanu means body. Brit can mean maintainer. So here we are in this world. What are we doing? We're very busy maintaining our bodies. It's a losing battle. And sooner or later, the body will collapse. But what do we do in our engagement in spiritual life as we pursue knowledge of self, Paramatma and Atma? We sustain our bodies with prasadam. Yes, exactly. we are doing the same thing, sustaining the body, but we're sustaining it with prasadam. We're also sustaining, not just, you could say we're sustaining the material body within the social body of devotees. Man does not live by bread alone. We live in association. We live with others, and this is a kind of body. The society is a social body. So this verse says, Vimukta Sangha, becoming free from material Sangha. But that's only possible, we understand, if one is entering into or remaining in and being sustained by spiritual Sangha. And it says, Jitta Shat Sapatna. Having conquered jitta, the six enemies, which Prabhupada translates as the five knowledge-acquiring senses and the mind. The word sapatna is interesting. It comes from sapatni, which means co-wife, or having a co-wife. And it's understood that a co-wife is a rival wife. So, for example, in the Bhagavatam, we have the story, the account of, what's his name, just slipping in my mind, he had 10 million wives or something. Chitraketu, yes, thank you. Chitraketu, there were so many sapatni, and they were a rival to the wife who had a child, and so what did they do? They murdered the wife who was a mother. So from that notion, from that idea of rivalry among co-wives comes sapatna, an enemy. And so here, jitashat sapatna, one whose six enemies described here. One could also say it's kama, krodha, lobha, and so on. Those are also described as highwaymen who steal one's progress. The pursuit of the devotee is to conquer these, but how to conquer them? By recognizing oneself as a servant of the Lord, and that means being an assistant to the immediate servants of the Lord. The Lord himself, we may be reminded, I mentioned Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is wandering. The Lord as Rama is also wandering. The Lord as Krishna is also wandering. And the devotees, when we go back home, back to Godhead, will that mean no more wandering? No, there is also wandering. When the gopis are separated from Krishna, what do? They wander in the forest seeking, looking for Krishna. However, in order to get to that position where we can wander with Krishna in the forest or wander after Krishna, seeking Krishna, Brahmanda Brahmite Kon Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Latabij. Brahmanda, the dark egg where we wander, Brahmite, wandering, Kon Bhagyavan Jeev, some fortunate jiva, Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bija receives, Paya obtains a seed which leads to a sprout, which leads to a vine, a creeper, which leads where? To Krishna's lotus feet. The image of the seed is different from the image of wandering. In order to cultivate a seed, you have to become a gardener. And if you become a gardener, you have to stay in one place. So we become gardeners, we become farmers when we take up devotional service. We stay in one place in the sense that we stay in the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, in the shelter of the devotee, and we receive prasadam. We receive it from who? And Krishna. Guru Krishna Prasade Paya. Not only Guru, not only Krishna, but the combined Guru and Krishna give us the seed of bhakti, which then stops our aimless wandering or our mindless wandering or our crazy wandering and turns our wandering to in the right direction. It turns it into seeking the Lord. And so the fourth verse of the Chaturshloki of Bhagavatam says, seek the Lord in all conditions. Seek understanding, seek knowledge of the Absolute Truths in all circumstances, in all places, in all times. So today's verse is a kind of warning, yavat tavat, as long as there is not understanding, there will be wandering. And the solution is to wander back to Godhead by accepting the shelter of Guru and Krishna and accepting the sangha of the devotees and being supported in that process with prasadam, tanubrit, sustaining prasadam. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Any further comments or questions? Yes. That would be a sort of extension of the analogy, wouldn't it? Could be, couldn't it? Yeah. Prabhupada's translation, and I suspect, in the word for word, I didn't have time to look, but I suspect that's coming from some commentary, some Acharya commentary. So, I mean, it's true, the senses are sometimes described as battling with each other, isn't it, for attention. The eyes want to draw us this way, the nose wants to draw us that way, and so on. Yeah. And then your comment? Is wandering. Ah. Okay. That's nice. You are one of those. I wouldn't worry about that. And the reason I wouldn't worry about it is because if you make it that far, I think all these things are adjusted very nicely. In Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopa, what's his name? Gop Kumar, yes. When Gop Kumar returns to meeting Krishna, I don't recall that the others are saying, oh, hey, this was the guy who was back there. I don't think they make snide remarks. I think it's all basically forgotten, isn't it? And even if they would remember, it would be in a joking spirit of affection. And, so I wouldn't worry about that. But I'll let you know if I ever make it there. Shamananda, I think you had it. Yeah. Five, 5.1.17, senses compared to co-wives. Oh, very good. Thank you. Oh, very good. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Jai Vandermanis. Yeah. Yes. So, two references. Thank you. Nora, you had a question. Yes. Very good question. This is the $64,000 question. How to keep out of the modes of nature? Well, one thing I sometimes say is that we're on a long distance run back home, back to Godhead. It's like in English there's the sprint, like they're getting ready for the Olympics now. There's going to be, I guess, the 100-meter dash sprint. So when you run 100 meters, you just put every bit of energy you have into every step that you take. And then after 100 meters, you drop. But our process is more like the long distance run, running, you know, 10 or 20 or 50 kilometers. You wouldn't put all your absolute energy into the first step and the second, and you'd be finished in no time, and then you'd just collapse. And then you can't do anything. You can't do any service. So it's more like a long distance run. We pace ourselves, and we have to... what does that mean? It means using our intelligence to see how can I serve enthusiastically today in such a way that I can also serve enthusiastically tomorrow. Let me use my energy in Krishna's service today, yes, but let me use it in such a way that I can also use it tomorrow and be enthusiastic and not, you know, be hangdog, overcome by the modes of nature. So this is a kind of art. Yoga Karma Sukhoshalam, Krishna says in the second chapter of Gita, it's the art of yoga, of activity in yoga. So indeed, how to do that? Well, we go on doing all the things that we do, and we do these things with some reflection, some intelligence, some thoughtfulness, some inquiring from others, listening, and never being complacent, being satisfied but never complacent. We should seek to be satisfied in every condition and never complacent. Complacent means falling asleep, means thinking everything is okay. We should always be a little, we should be satisfied and always a little dissatisfied. There's got to be something more that I can do. There's got to be some more more and better and more opportunity to bring more people to Krishna, all these things. Anyway, that's, you have asked a big question. How indeed to stay out of, well, the simple question, Krishna Surya Samaya Hoyandakark, keep in the sunlight of Krishna. And that means being able to distinguish the sun from the shadow. So that's our challenge, and that's why we keep hearing Bhagavatam, to distinguish between sun and shadow, sun, direct sunlight and shadow. Yeah. Okay. Well, we can try. Sorry, what? Responsible. Yes, doubt is an interesting thing. Okay. Oh, this is another very big question. That's a whole lecture. I think you've raised a very interesting point, and in at least in some sense, I feel like I want to agree with you. I think there's a good use of doubt, and it's mentioned in our Bhagavatam that doubt is a symptom of intelligence. So I would say there's healthy doubt and there's unhealthy doubt. And what you've suggested is there is a kind of healthy doubting of one's knowledge. So yes, I would say that's there, and one has to also balance that with, Prabhupada spoke of a certain simplicity of the devotee, that when one encounters truth, that one has a simple readiness to be open to that truth and accept it. And one may not have a full comprehension, a full realization of that truth, but one has a sense, this, I'm in the right direction. Let me keep going this way. Whereas the doubter may say, no, I don't think so, and miss the chance. May you know, wander off again and actually miss the chance of getting the full truth. That's what I would say in brief. Thank you. Thank you very much, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Hare Krishna.